Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's podcast. Thank you for downloading today's episode on February 19th. Lots of news to get through today. We've spoken to a Folkestone mum who's written a book to help other parents through grief. There are calls for parents and carers in Kent to keep their kids more active, and you can hear from the new landlords who have taken over a popular pub in Rochester. Stay listening for all of that, but first let's take a look at our top story for today. A Dartford man has been sent to prison after throwing boiling sugar water over the woman whose house he was staying in. Now, this is a bit of a complicated story, so Lucy's here to unpack some more of the details for us. First of all, Luce, what do we know about what was happening in the lead up to the attack?
Well, we know Christopher Gillam had nowhere to stay and was living with his victim, Sarah Tragner, at a property in Whitstable. The pair had met on Facebook, and Sarah, who was grieving the loss of her mother, had invited him to stay in her spare room for 1 week. However, 1 week became three, and Sarah discovered Gillam had gone through her personal belongings, selling her watches and taking money without her knowing. The 49-year-old believes he attacked her because he sensed she was going to ask him to leave.
And what do we know about the attack itself?
Sarah says it was just before 5:30 a.m. on Sunday, July 27th. She was laying in bed when Gillam poured a kettle full of boiling water and sugar over her. The mixture is commonly used by prison inmates as it creates a paste that sticks to the skin, causing deep, severe and long-lasting injuries. Sarah went downstairs and tried to call emergency services when she was hit on the back of the head with a hammer. She was later taken to hospital and has been left with scars from her knee to her lower back and had to have a wound on her head glued together.
The court also heard Gillam attacked a police officer, is that right?
Yes, he'd left the scene by the time emergency services arrived after the attack, but he later went back to the property and attacked a police officer who remained at the scene. She also had to be taken to hospital with serious injuries.
And we know he's been sent to prison. Do you have any of the details of his sentencing?
Yes, Gillam, who's from Willow Road in Dartford, was sentenced to 10 years in prison for grievous bodily harm with intent. Other charges, including assault causing actual bodily harm and criminal damage, were assessed at the same hearing but didn't increase his overall sentence. The court also imposed a 15-year restraining order.
Thanks, Lucy. You can read more about this story by heading to the homepage of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories: a fire which broke out at a house in Tenterton is being treated as suspicious by investigators. Crews were on the scene in Smallhythe Road for around 17 hours after the blaze broke out in the early hours of Tuesday morning. Police were still there yesterday morning, and the property is said to have suffered extensive damage. A drug dealer has been jailed for his role in the large-scale supply of cannabis and cocaine across Kent. The 43-year-old admitted being involved in the supply of drugs totalling more than £90,000 between March and June in 2020. He was arrested in Newcastle after police decoded encrypted messages he'd used to communicate with other criminals. He's been locked up for 4.5 years. Record levels of illegally imported meat have been seized at the port of Dover. Nearly 34 tonnes were uncovered in January, sparking calls for immediate action from the government to crack down on biosecurity risks. DEFRA has said it is committed to protecting the UK farming industry, adding it had secured more than £3 million for the Dover Port Health Authority. British nationals Lindsay and Craig Foreman have been handed a 10-year sentence in Iran for espionage charges, which they deny. The couple were detained during a motorcycle tour around the world in January last year. Their family say they've been shown no evidence. The foreign secretary's described the jail term as totally unjustifiable and says they're working on bringing the family home. A Folkestone mum whose daughter took her own life is sharing her story in the hopes of helping others. Melody Rose Pickney was just 14 when she died in January 2020. Carrie Callingham wrestled with the trauma and difficult questions surrounding her death. She's written a book called The First of Everything Without You. It's a guided grief diary with prompts to help people heal, cope with loss and remember loved ones. Reporter James Pallant was able to speak to Carrie about it.
Melody was a very creative child. She loved cosplay and music, My Chemical Romance in particular. She's always making things.
And what was your experience with grief?
My experience of grief was very overwhelming at first, terrible. I was very much lost for the first few months, and it's changed now. I'm still grieving, but it's much more manageable and very different.
How did the people around you react?
The people in my inner circle reacted with love and surrounded me when I lost Melody. And some people understandably avoided me as they didn't know how to react.
What does your book aim to do?
My book aims to be a place where people can write their memories about their loved one and hopefully explore and understand the feelings they're going through surrounding the grief.
If you've been affected by the issues raised in this story, support is available. You can contact Samaritans Free at any time on 116 123, email joe@samaritans.org or visit www.samaritans.org.
Kent Online News.
Residents against plans for 300 new homes near Canterbury will make their case at an appeal this week. It's after council turned down the proposals for Littlebourne and Cladman Developments challenged the ruling. Both sides are expected to have their cases heard tonight before the Planning Inspectorate makes a final decision next month. Elsewhere, an application has been submitted for 100 new homes on a commercial pear orchard in Medway. The plans for the site in Cliff on the Hoo Peninsula would include a mix of apartments and houses, with a quarter being designated as affordable. Some locals have objected, saying it would have a negative impact on wildlife and they would be out of keeping with the character of the area. Villagers are campaigning to save a former community centre near Folkestone that's said to be turned into social housing. The Age UK Centre closed last spring and the charity moved all of its services to a site in Hythe. Council own the building and have revealed plans to create five new homes for the elderly. Yvonne Freeman lives in the area. She's been telling us the building should be returned to its previous use.
Yes, well, we had the public meeting in February last year when we knew that Age UK were moving out, and we decided to form a committee, and we decided we ought to have some formal structure if we were going to have any success in with the council and with other organisations. And so I'd previously been involved with a community interest company, and that seemed to be the best route to go down. So we set that up, and that is still in existence. There has been talk about charitable status, but that's really a bit further down the road, I think. We're a fairly small committee. There's about seven members of us, but we meet once a week, and everything is minuted. We had a face-to-face with the council back in May to look at other options, because they want to use this, as you know, for flats. And the Tain Centre in the village, in the Methodist Church, was suggested, but it's got a leaky roof, and the availability is not there for us, because this used to be open 5 days a week, serving breakfast, lunch, and it was a very popular centre for people who live on their own. And since that's gone, Age UK have moved out, we really haven't got much left in the village. We've got a very good cafe, excellent. And the gentleman and his wife who run it, they run it from Tuesdays to Saturday lunchtime. And fair enough, they have Sunday off and Monday off. So at the weekends, you can't get a cup of coffee in the village. Nowhere to meet, unless you want to go to the pub. But the pub's not everybody's cup of tea, as it were. And so, you know, we are very limited where people can meet socially, and it's having an impact in the village. And talk of bringing more people who are on their own into the village is just going to increase this. And social isolation is such a big issue in this area, and particularly we found in our village now. And so, you know, the community are looking to us to do something, and we are doing our best. But unfortunately, we're coming up against the council who want more social housing, and we've already got at least 86 properties. So, or at least 86 residences. And so, you know, it is a big issue, and we want to get it resolved, because we care about our village, we care about the people that live here.
A Folkestone and Hythe District Council spokesperson says while there is merit in the campaign's proposals, they feel the need for housing is far more significant and have suggested alternative nearby venues for their use.
Kent Online News.
Efforts are being stepped up to protect villages along a river near Canterbury from flooding following persistent rainfall. Council say the nail board is usually dry, but it's now been filled with water and joined the Little Stour, resulting in full system flow. Flood defence measures are being put in place, and authorities authorities are working with the Environment Agency to monitor levels. Plans have been submitted to redevelop a former co-op building in Dartford. The application would see the site in the town centre, which has been empty for the last two decades, turned into homes, shops and potentially a cinema. It would form part of the Westgate Regeneration Project. A decision is due by the end of April. Now, parents in Kent are being urged to get their little ones more active. Studies show, as well as the physical benefits, exercise can also help reduce stress and improve concentration. Daniel Bromley is a development officer at Active Kent and Medway. He and I were able to sit down for a chat.
It's not necessarily about joining a sports club, running a marathon. It's very much just introducing those small bouts of physical activity throughout the day, and particularly when we talk about children and young people and adults, you know, our ability to concentrate and sit still for is probably lower than it's ever been in the way that we actually consume so many things instantly. So we have to be aware of where we're at now. And I think in terms of just little movement breaks throughout the day, part of what we do within schools is we try and influence and advocate for active learning, active lessons. And like I say, it's just building in those small bouts of physical activity. So brisk walks, you know, yeah, if you can get up to a jog and then into a run, brilliant. But as I say, it is about that movement and just reducing that sedentary time.
And well, I mean, you touched on it there. I mean, these days it is so hard to find those windows of time to be active. I, you know, screens are playing a huge role in our lives at the moment. We use them at work and we're using them at home for entertainment. How difficult, I mean, is that one of the main challenges of getting kids up and out, one of the main barriers to getting kids active?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, as we know, the competing interests for children and young people, understandably, with the modern age is, you know, computer games, social media, phones, devices. So, yeah, absolutely. That is one of the biggest barriers. And we're not telling young people they, you know, shouldn't be using phones, shouldn't be on social media necessarily. I know there's a lot of change in government policy around that at the moment. But generally speaking, it's just about that little and often. And it's making sure that we are out being active, you know, and taking breaks away from those devices. And again, and that also helps with our social skills, our connection into communities and into our places to actually get out and, you know, for our well-being, just lift our heads from those phones. And like I say, if you can do that and get out of your houses, obviously, you're going to increase your physical activity while being off your devices as well. So that's, yeah, definitely what we'd advocate for.
And I think, I mean, you mentioned there about well-being, particularly when it comes to mental health. I think when a lot of people think about the best ways that they can support their mental health, often they might think about, you know, counselling or therapy or things like that. But physical activity can have huge benefits to a person's mental health. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of medical professionals suggest physical activity would be the wonder drug. If you can bottle it up and sell it, it would be that for all, for a variety of conditions. And mental health is no different. You know, so if you can release those endorphins, we know physical activity can improve mood. We know it can lower the risk of depression by 30%. It improves sleep as well. So it can relieve that tension, improve your sleep. And again, it's just around, like I said earlier, it's about like improving those social connections as well. So, you know, taking part in physical activity can help you make new friends and just be connected with your local place in your community.
And this is for children as well, not just for adults.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, children, you know, at a time where we know that 20.3% of 8 to 16 year olds have a probable mental health disorder in the county. So we know that absolutely physical activity and releasing those endorphins, and in times of stress around exams as well, we need to really make sure that we are keeping children and young people active during those times, because absolutely, you know, that's when you've got the most to gain from being physically active at times of stress and anxiety.
Now, we've been discussing it sort of a little bit before this, but, you know, you brought it up. Parents are busy. Everybody's schedule is packed. How do we find the time? Why should we prioritize making sure that our kids are getting enough exercise and are being active enough?
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, we know from our local insight, we know that when we've put on physical activity sessions, we know that young people have reported that they felt happier, that they've, you know, they've been able to cope more when things go wrong. And also they find it easier to concentrate. So, you know, if we're a family looking at trying to support our young people through their education, for one, that, you know, it's going to be benefited, their education is benefited through being physically active. So I do think that's something that we obviously have to try and find that time. And it's not easy at all. And that's where, you know, we can help Active Kent and Medway through our Everyday Active program and for our campaign, that we try and say that it's about building physical activity into your everyday life. Is it a case of not dropping children off at the school gates, just giving that, parking 5 minutes further away and having that brisk walk into school to, set children up for the day and have an active start to the day? And as we've already mentioned, we know that's going to boost mood and release those endorphins that are going to help us throughout our day and build that resilience.
Kent Online News.
Canterbury Christchurch University are planning to lease part of their library building to a private firm following a drop in student use. Augustine House opened in 2009 at a cost of £35 million, but uni bosses say they're only using about 15% of the space, with visitor numbers down by 56,000 since 2019. Physical book borrowing has dropped by 75% in the last 6 years. Parts of the building will be leased to chartered accountants Burgess Hodgson, who are based locally and looking to expand. The wife of a veteran who was discharged from Maidstone Hospital wearing nothing but socks and NHS-issue pants is still waiting to be reimbursed for his lost property. Former Royal Marine Ted Leaney has Alzheimer's and spent 2 weeks in hospital battling a chest infection last October. During his stay, he lost special £500 insoles. At the time, Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells NHS Trust apologised and said they'd help apply for compensation. Months on, the family say they're still waiting. The trust says an investigation is underway. An independent music shop in Herne Bay is set to close after more than 40 years. Music Bay opened in the town centre in 1984 and has helped generations of young musicians to find their first instruments. 66-year-old owner Graham Harmsworth spoke to Kent Online after announcing his decision to step back from the business.
When I first opened the shop here in 1984, it was predominantly to help young people get on in life and on in music. Over the years, things have changed slightly because younger people tend to do more on the internet and in bedrooms. But originally we were here to help people out, get bands and people playing instruments and helping them out as much as we can. The town over the years has become a lot better. The seafront's lovely now. Lots of different shops have come and gone. It's a lovely town. If anybody's there for a day or whatever, pop down, have a walk along the seafront, and then please pop into your independent shops because we all need your help. I've had a lovely time in Herne Bay, but all good things come to an end.
Kent Online News.
Council bosses have unveiled their plans to regenerate town centres in Whitstable, Herne Bay and Canterbury. They include a dedicated welcome centre in the city and securing the redevelopment of the former Nason's and Debenham site. The local authority also wants to revitalise Whitstable Harbour and improve connectivity in Herne Bay. Their action plan is due to come into force in October. And finally today, we've been hearing from the new landlords of a pub in Rochester, who say they've had a lifelong ambition of running their community pub. Richard and Emma Bailey have taken over the Rising Sun, a venue they frequented for many years. The previous landlords made the surprise announcement they'd be leaving last December, and the venue closed completely around 3 weeks ago. Our reporter Charlotte Phillips has been able to catch up with Richard.
We've both frequented in the past. I've actually performed here in the past, so it's quite a special place to us as well. So when we heard that the previous tenants were going to be leaving, we were quite saddened at first. And then we were quite excited by the prospect of perhaps being able to take it over ourselves. So, and then it's been quite a process, and it is our first pub. But here we are, we're in. So, yeah, it's still feels quite surreal.
Yeah, and like you said, you've been to the pub a lot before. I saw that on your post as well. Was it purely just kind of... But what made you decide, rather than kind of a lot of people would have been sad that their local was shutting, what made you decide that you kind of wanted to step in and do something to save it?
We've kind of always liked the idea of running a pub. Emma's worked doing the back, the office admin work at a pub before, and also has worked at the City Wall as a manager. So, with her skills combined, she's more than capable of running a pub, but we've always fancied the idea of one day doing it, going for it. And so when this came up, it kind of pushed us that little bit further to actually go and do it rather than talk about it.
Yeah, actually do something about it. Sounds great. Yeah. And have you purchased the pub? Are you the owners or are you kind of the landlords?
We're the landlords. Perfect. So it's owned by Admiral Taverns.
Right, okay.
And we're the new landlords.
I know it's really kind of early days, but will you be making changes? What are you kind of going to be doing going forward?
Importantly, we're not looking to completely change what the previous owners have done here, because they actually built a really good community pub, which people liked, and it was clear when they closed the doors, reading all the messages on social media, that they didn't do much wrong, really, in the eyes of the community. So we're not looking to make big changes, but just looking to refine it. And there'll be more focus on sort of well-curated live music, creating a good, strong atmosphere, and making sure that the service and the standards are just consistent, and just, you know, just small improvements, but doing them properly.
The pair are now working to stock and prepare the pub for reopening, but a date hasn't been set just yet. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose a subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.